There's a growing body of evidence that links giving with happiness. Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. And I'm really pleased to have with us today, to talk with us today, Jenny Santee. She is a philanthropy advisor, and she's author of a fascinating book. It's called The Giving Way to Happiness, Stories and Science Behind the Life-Changing Power of Giving. And in it, she shares research. She has some really wonderful, heartwarming stories for you and some practical advice on how to give. So talking with her about what makes you give, how important is contributing or volunteering in your life? I hope you'll join in the conversation. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org, or you can post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Jenny Santee, welcome to the program. Thanks for joining us today.
Hi, Larry. Thanks so much for having me in your show.
You know what? I felt, after reading your book, or as I was reading your book, I was feeling happier all the time just hearing what other people were doing in the way of philanthropy. It was a wonderful feeling. And you know what? It caused me to think about my own giving and my own contributing and volunteering and what I might do differently or what I could do better. So you've got a great book there.
I love hearing that, Larry, because writing this book was probably one of the hardest things I'd ever done. But I had to do it because I was so convinced that I had to share these stories about how giving not only changes the world, but changes our own lives.
Well, you've probably been asked this question a million times, but you're a philanthropy advisor, and I saw that job title, and I thought, what a wonderful job. But I imagine most people wouldn't recognize that title.
I know, which is why the truth is, Larry, sometimes when I just cannot be bothered to give the full explanation, I just come up with a phony job and pretend I'm a designer of some sort.
But you work with some of the wealthiest people, in many ways wealthy, around the world.
Yes, it's fascinating that way to be able to advise very successful individuals and families on their giving, because you see a side of them that is really different from, the hardcore businessman type. But, you see the softer side of them, the side of them that is all about their hopes, their dreams for themselves, for legacy, and what they ultimately want to do, even after all the material career success that they've achieved. But apart from meeting all these very wealthy people, that's just really one part of it.
Yep.
You also meet such amazing people from different walks of life, because when you're in the philanthropy world, who do you meet? You meet nonprofit professionals who are so dedicated, social entrepreneurs who are fighting to find solutions to major problems that we have in this world. You meet volunteers who, really don't have to do any of this, but just want to be active in a cause that they're passionate about. Meet people from different walks of life, various age groups, young and old, little kids who just want to do their lemonade stand for charity or shave their hair bald to support someone with cancer. And it's just so inspiring. So I wanted to tell the stories of these people I met all along the way, and the book is a product of that.
I'm a radio host, but I'm also a professor here at the University of Wisconsin. And to me, I was really pleased that you start the book, the first few chapters, talking about the science behind the physical reactions to giving. It's pretty positive.
Yes, it's fascinating, isn't it? Because we hear so many times that, don't you feel the joy of giving? But it's not just. It's not just fluff. There's actually scientific backing that altruism is hardwired in the brain and is pleasurable, and experiments have shown that. So, for example, through modern technology, through the fMRI technology that we have these days, we know that when we give or when we volunteer, two brain systems are activated. And these are exactly the same systems that are activated, stimulated by food and by sex. I mean, these are essentially the pleasure centers of the brain. And the benefits are not just mental, but also physical. Have you ever heard of the runner's high that, you know, we feel that after vigorous exercise? So there's also this concept of the helper's high, which is the powerful, amazing physical sensation associated with helping others. And I've certainly felt that in my life whenever I've struggled with my own happiness, and I have gone through moments of sadness, depression. I know myself that the times when I felt most happy and useful was when I knew, wow, I'm able to help others. I mean something to other people. And it just makes me feel so fulfilled to be able to help even just one person. Yeah. So there is science behind it, and I can go on and on about that. But you know, the way to really experience it is to try and observe yourself. How do you feel after doing something to help someone out? How do you feel after someone tells you, you changed my life?
It's an amazing amazing feeling, isn't it? And actually, there are even health benefits from volunteering or from giving, as the research shows.
Yes, for example, among the elderly, it's been found that those who spend their time volunteering regularly demonstrate higher endorphin levels. They have lower blood pressure. It triggers a chain of reaction in adults that lead to all these feel-good feelings. And, you know, every day now we are learning more and more about how negative lifestyle factors like poor diet and lack of exercise increase hypertension risk. So, you know, what about a positive lifestyle factor? What are the positive lifestyle factors that could actually decrease the risk of disease? And studies show, for instance, all these studies show that older adults who remain healthy and age successfully are those who volunteer regularly. So volunteerism, various social and, you know, all these social components of volunteerism definitely influence one's health for the better.
You know, we have a Facebook question from Tiffany, who wonders, if giving is giving beneficial only if you value philanthropy, or do you still get the same benefit if you think charity and giving aren't of much value?
Well, you know, even though my profession is officially philanthropy advisor, those are the words, most of the time I really don't like the word philanthropy because it's often misunderstood and, well, it's very often misspelled. And it, you know, it sounds so elite. It tends to exclude a lot of us, and most of us don't even consider getting involved in the philanthropic space because, hey, we're not as rich as Bill Gates and Oprah, so forget about philanthropy, right? But you know, so I think it's time we redefine philanthropy by simply going back to its roots. Over the years, we have come to associate this word with benefactions in the tens and hundreds of millions of dollars. I mean, geez, who can afford to do that?
Yeah.
Not even, you know, 1%. Yeah, so, but etymologically, if you look at the root words of philanthropy, it simply means the love of humanity. From the Greek root words phil, which means love, and anthropos, which means mankind. It's simply the love of mankind. And what's been true throughout the ages is that the poor give much more generously than the rich. And so we can all be philanthropists by giving our time, our talents, or treasures to something that we care about.
Well, you certainly provide us with some wonderful examples in that area. One of the One of the really cool chapters in the book had to do with a kid, and now I'm mixing names here, Joshua, I believe.
Oh, yes, Joshua Williams. Isn't he incredible?
What? And he's, you know, and that's the perfect, I think that's the perfect example of what you were just talking about, because he started when he was, what, 4 or 5 years old?
Exactly, a toddler strapped into the back seat, into the... He was a little kid strapped into the back seat of his mother's car when this little boy, Joshua, saw outside the window a homeless man on the street. And so he cried out to his mom to say, "Mom, you have to stop the car. We have to help that person." And so the mom obliged. Thought, "All right, I'm going to do as my child tells me, because he wants to perform his good deed." And so they went out of the car, they helped that homeless person, and Joshua was happy. But then, you know, this is Florida, and you see homeless people on the streets every few blocks. Every day you see someone on the streets. And Joshua would point the homeless out every time he would see them. And he said, "Mom," he would do it every time, "Mom, we need to help this man. Mom, we need to help this woman. Mom, we need to do something." And finally, the mother said, "You can't do that. You can't do that all the time, because, that's where it started." And Joshua said, "Because why? Because why? Why can't I help them all the time?" And the mom didn't really have an answer to that. So what ended up happening was, through the help of the community, through the help of their family, and take note, these are not billionaire types. They're working class, people of average means, but they gather the help of the community, the church, other family members, to start a little charity to feed the homeless in Florida. And that ended up becoming the Joshua's Heart Foundation, which he started when he was only 5 years old. He's a young teenager now, and I call him the philanthropy prodigy.
And he's still, even at, what is he, 12 or 13 when you interviewed him, something like that?
Younger than that, but I was, I was trying to ask very simple questions, thinking, "Oh, I'm talking to a kid. I should maybe tone myself down." But no, he was very authoritative. He made me feel like an idiot. And I admire him. I mean, after speaking to someone like Joshua and reading about his story, what's our excuse, right?
Yeah.
Not seeing anything. Yeah.
Talking today with Jenny Santee. She is a philanthropy advisor to some of the world's most generous philanthropists and celebrity activists, and was the head of philanthropy services in Southeast Asia for the world's largest wealth manager, and has written The Giving Way to Happiness, Stories and Science Behind the Life-Changing Power of Giving. How important is giving in your life? Has donating or volunteering given you happiness? Do you have a story to share about that? I'd love to hear from you. Give us a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234. You can email us. The email address is talk@WPR.org, or go ahead and post on our Facebook page titled The Larry Mueller Show. I'm Larry Mueller. Jill Nadeau, our on-air producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up at 11:45 today, University of Wisconsin Chancellor Rebecca Blank will be here to talk about what's going on with UW-Madison, so I hope you'll stay with us for that. Right now, visiting with Jenny Santee, who is the author of The Giving Way to Happiness, Stories and Science Behind the Life-Changing Power of Giving. And if you want a high of your own, you might experience it the way I did when I read her book, and caused me to sort of examine my own giving and my own charitable work. Certainly, I think, for the better. And so I'm really happy I had a chance to read it, and I'm happy to be here to talk with her and with you today. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Email at talk@WPR.org, or go ahead and post on our Facebook page. at the Larry Mueller Show. Would love to hear from you. You know, Jenny, we've had a number of listeners over the years call to say they get so many solicitations that they just don't want to give to anything anymore. What kind of help do you have for them?
Oh, yes. This sensation of donor fatigue is so real. Donor fatigue, compassion fatigue. That's what happens when we see charity appeals. We're bombarded by all these appeals, all these images of starving children, natural disasters. People need this, that. There's yet another cause that needs help. You know, there's not a day that goes by that we don't get stopped by a fundraiser in the street. Even the grocery checkout will ask us for money. A friend will ask us for help. A Facebook friend will ask for support for charity marathon, all those things, right? And it's very understandably exhausting, and it seems to run contrary to this whole idea that giving is great. Giving can make you feel good. Giving can make you happy. And, you know, I feel this myself being in the philanthropy world. Sometimes I just don't want to hear another person ask for this and that, and we experience it. It's such a real phenomenon. And how do we get around this? I was very curious about this question myself, because I went through it myself. I've been so idealistic all my life, wanting to make a difference, and I think that's true of so many young people, millennials these days. They want to have a career, not just about the money, but they want to have a career with social purpose, right?
Mm-hmm.
But people realize that when you're so dedicated to something, it's really hard. It can burn you out. You'll be turned down. People will shoot down your ideas, or too many people will ask for your help. You'll help so many people along the way. It will burn you out. So what to do? There's so many insights, so many stories that I've come across and written about in this book, about how people have coped with it. But let me just share with you some ideas. One is to learn how to take care of yourself. And it's one of the things that, it sounds so easy, right? It sounds so easy. Hey, take care of yourself. Hey, learn to love yourself. But what does that really mean? What does that really mean? And that, for me, I had to go through this major course of self-discovery to learn what it truly means to take care of myself, to love myself. And again, this is a very long topic, but there's so many stories in the book that tell that.
Yes.
The other thing is to actually learn how to say no, how to gracefully turn things down. And you'll find that it's easier to say no once you've actually identified your core purpose, your core mission, your focus of your giving, the focus of your philanthropy. So you find it easier. So perhaps you've been solicited to donate to a charity that is, of course, something you care about. Because, you know, we all, of course, we care about good things. We want to make good things happen. But how many good things can we make happen realistically, right? So, for example, you've been asked to volunteer or sit on the board or write a check to a charity that's about, let's say, cancer. But let's say you already decided that your main passion, because of your life experiences, because of your profession perhaps, because of your upbringing and where you grew up, perhaps you already decided that you will dedicate majority of your time, your talents, your treasures to something you so deeply care about. Perhaps that chosen cause is, let's say, the environment, right? That's another very, very difficult cause to be part of, because you don't even know what difference you'll be making. It's all over the long term. Can you imagine if you actually split your efforts between those two? It would be very difficult. You'll be less effective in one. Your heart cannot possibly be so deeply invested in both. So you might decline the other one altogether, or just say, this is as much as I can do for your charity because I'm fully committed to this other one. And people will understand that. The other thing that we can all do, you know, I'm in New York City, and we just had an event last night to launch this book. And someone in the audience asked the same question that you asked me, Larry, and she said, what can we do? Because it gets so difficult. It really gets so difficult when you try and support a charity or try to give so much to someone. It's heartbreaking. It's not always easy. And what we all agreed on when we were having the discussion last night is that we should learn to lean on each other. You know, what happens when you're involved in the charity space, in the philanthropy world, is that you meet a lot of amazing people, very kind, dedicated people. It helps to discuss these things. It helps to share your frustrations, your challenges, and find strength in one another.
Mm. Good points. Excellent points. Thank you for that comment. And I want to go to the phones because every one of our phone lines is filled right now. Jimmy in Mequonago has something for us. Jimmy, thank you for waiting. Hello.
Yes, thank you, Larry. I'm a big fan of your show, and I always love your guests. But I would say in all the time I've been listening to your show, this guest today is more on mark at where we are as a nation right now than any guest I've ever heard you have on. She's obviously done her research. I love the fact that she backs everything up with science, and I can hear it through her voice, her passion and her love for what she's doing. And I just admire that. And so I'd like to tell her, thank you for everything that you're doing. I can only imagine the lives that you have touched. And I think putting your passion into a book that you can share with all of us so that we can run a parallel line of thinking in philanthropy is the greatest thing you could have done for our nation where we are right now. And I wanna parallel a concept. I'm a recovering alcoholic, and Dr. Bob and Bill right there in your hometown started an organization called Alcoholics Anonymous, and the whole foundation, they speak volumes that this can never work unless each and every one of us give back what has so freely been given to us in serenity. And every time you speak, I just think of how good I feel inside. And I, too, have suffered from depression and things like that. And I think of how wonderful, even when it was unexpected that I would help someone, even at times I didn't even know I was helping someone by sharing my story, how good it felt and how good it feels to give freely without expecting anything in return. And that is the foundation of Alcoholics Anonymous. That is how it has saved so many lives and put so many families back together. And my hat is off to this guest, and I just wish you God's blessings in all your endeavors.
Oh my God. Sorry, was that Jimmy?
Jimmy, yeah.
Oh my God, Jimmy. Can I play that back when I'm in moments of doubt, which I go through a lot? Thank you so much for saying that. I'm speechless. It just means so much to me. It's amazing. Thank you so much. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Jimmy, for that comment. And he's right. Giving back, well, it's what you believe in, Jenny, and the rewards of it are greater than you can ever imagine.
Yeah, I'm still trying to recover from. I was very moved by what you said, Jimmy. Thank you so much. It means so much to a first-time author such as myself. But I do want to mention that in this book, I also talk about Alcoholics Anonymous in the context of what giving can do to help us heal from our painful experiences. And in a study of alcoholics going to the Alcoholics Anonymous program, it was very clear that those who helped others were nearly twice as likely to stay sober a year later. And their levels of depression were lower, too. So what this is what experts call the wounded healer, you know, the wounded healer principle. It means that helping has a tremendous benefit for those who need it. Helping has a tremendous benefit for the helpers themselves. And that's why, you know, I really was convinced I had to write this book about what giving can do to change the life of the giver.
Jimmy, thank you so much. I want to give Leslie in La Crosse a chance to join in as well. Leslie, thank you for calling. Hello.
Hi, Larry. I've called in about this subject before, but and I'm working right now, so I'm pulling over to take a break. But it's a perfect timing for this idea, but I have 10 grandkids, and Christmas time is always so like, ew, it's just kind of like, oh, more toys, more junk, more, you know, more stuff. And one thing I did start a few years ago is that I have each kid come over and just help me during the day. And I tell them, I need some help. I got some jobs. If you can come over, I'll pay you a little bit at the end, and then you can use that for your Christmas money. And so they do jobs, and I pay them, you know, a few dollars. And then we go to the store, and I have them buy for each of their brothers and sisters and their mom and dad. And just little trinket things. We go to the dollar store. So they love it. They take the money that they have made, and they buy stuff, and they think so hard on what so-and-so would like. And it's so cute because I see what they would really like, but we got to get something for the other kids. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And then all of my kids, my own kids, not my grandkids, but my kids, say that is the highlight of their Christmas when they have the exchange. One of my kids have 5 kids. The other one have 2, and the other one have 2. And one has 1. But it's just, they say the highlight of the Christmas is when they do their little exchange gifts for each other, and we just have to keep doing it because they just love it.
Oh, thank you, Leslie. A comment, Jenny?
Oh, that's a wonderful practice. Thanks for sharing that, Leslie. And I do want to share something that I've also written about and came across in my career. It's a lesson we can learn from families who have foundations. They do this very interesting thing where, more than a handful of families I've met have do this. They say that they give their children money, but it specifically has to be allocated in 3 buckets. 3 buckets. So let's say you give your grandchild, let's say $100. That's a lot of money. But there are specific instructions. So a third of that, they can spend it on themselves. They can buy a toy, they can buy candy, whatever they want. A third of that. The other third of that, they have to save because they have to learn the concept of saving your money for whatever they might need it for in the future. But and you know what to do, what they instruct their kids to do with the other third? They instruct the kids to give it away. To give it away, to choose a charity, to choose a cause. And they have to do their research, and they have to explain why they chose that cause. And I found this so beautiful. I don't have children of my own, but I'm sure once I do, I will teach them this practice. I thought it was beautiful.
It's wonderful. And appreciated that call. And Linda in Green Bay has something for us as well. Hi, Linda. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Larry. I'm a brand-new listener. Just happened upon you today.
Oh, wonderful.
I know. It's never too late to acquire a new listener. And I appreciate your guest, and just wanted to share an experience, and I do have a question. I have a very rare vestibular disorder. It's called superior canal dehiscence syndrome, and I struggled for probably 6 years before being properly diagnosed at Johns Hopkins in Baltimore. And I have it bilaterally, which is even more rare. Most people only have it on one side. And I had to have two craniotomy surgeries to help improve my symptoms. And it's an often disabling disorder. It's invisible. Most people can't tell that you have it. And my daughter helped my husband and I after my second surgery. I'm not working anymore because of what the after effects of this syndrome, even with the surgeries. But she helped us create a website for people that have what I have. And we're very small right now, but we're giving $100 grants to people all over the world who have this disorder, who have requested a grant. And I can't even tell you what that does for me, just getting me out of my own head and helping me refrain from self-pity and getting, you know, on a negative trajectory. So it's we're hoping to raise awareness. We're hoping to help people in a grander way down the line. My question is, I have a heart, and you touched on it somewhat, but I have a heart for so many causes. I have limited time. Would I be silly to try to do, you know, more than just this one thing? Because I have a heart for the homeless and a heart for, you know, the minorities in my community. And I'm trying to figure out, you know, if I'm doing a disservice to the foundation that we've established by getting involved in some other things as well. And she touched on that somewhat.
Well, Linda, thank you so much for your call and the work you're doing. Jenny, a comment from you?
Thank you for that question. I think that there's definitely no right and wrong way to do things. But what I've observed among many givers that I've met over time is that our focus can evolve over time. Mm-hmm. And people usually start out giving to a wide range of causes, a portfolio of causes. And then over time, this eventually narrows down to the ones where they feel they can truly make a difference and the ones about which they are deeply passionate. And because they find that they are more effective when they concentrate their efforts on just a few core issues instead of spreading themselves too thin.
So
wonderful.
Yeah. So there may be some evolution in your future, Linda. But
thank you so much.
But you're doing some wonderful work right now, from the sound of it, with that website. Thank you so much.
Thank you too.
And Aaron in Hartford, thank you for calling. Hello.
Hello, Larry. Thank you for having me.
Sure thing.
I love the topic of this show that you're doing, and my parents are very charitable, and I've been raised in kind of a way that you give back. And currently, I'm the marketing director of my father's dental office here in Hartford, Wisconsin. And at Grand Avenue Dental Care, our mission is sharing smiles. And what we've done is use this idea of giving, and we have two free days of dental care a year, one for kids and one for community members down and out. And this is the second year we've done our Christmas patient giveaway, where people can apply or nominate someone else who doesn't have the means but really is in need of dental work. And last year we had three finalists, and unfortunately we couldn't choose just one, so we did three smile makeovers for community members.
Mm-hmm.
And this year our goal is to just do the one. But the remarkable thing that you guys were speaking about is that it does cause such joy amongst the doctors, amongst the staff, the volunteers. But our patients, what we found for us is that our patients in our community really appreciate it. And the giving goes beyond. We get involved with our patients. We get involved in our community. And it's just been such a wonderful way to talk about our dental office and what's at the heart of what we do.
Yeah.
It is service. And the giving is, I'm blessed to be raised by my parents. And this is the second year my mom and I have actually organized a breast cancer run here in Hartford as well. She's a survivor of 5 years. And so this year we raised over $22,000, and we're giving it back to local families who are struggling through that disease. But it affects so much more than even just bringing joy to the one person. I just think it goes beyond the doors of you or your business and spreads throughout the community. And I can't wait to get her book, honestly.
Oh, well, Erin, thank you so much. Jenny, I'm sure you have a comment.
Oh, thank you so much for sharing that. And it's really so inspiring and encouraging for me to hear all this. And I just really also want to share
it's not just about happiness. You know, it's not just about, oh, if I give, I'm going to be happy. There are lots of other things that will happen to us when we give back. And some of the things are, well, for one, you'll meet a lot of interesting people you would have otherwise not met. Because when you give, one door opens to 10 other doors, and you'll find that your circle of friends and acquaintances more diverse, interesting, and inspiring. The other thing is that you'll have fun. And, you know, when I asked a group of passionate activists and volunteers how they felt after having given their time to various causes, whether they were campaigning against war, against animal testing, or pushing for ambitious changes in LGBT rights, whatever it was, they told me that, you know, the sense of happiness and camaraderie that they have felt through all these intense shared experiences was such an important thing for them. And this is why, you know, when you meet those people, you think, wow, these people gave up their lives to make a difference. But, you know, these people who seem to have given it all up are some of the happiest, most fulfilled, and least angst-ridden people you'll ever meet. And then the third thing is that when you give, you'll heal from painful experiences. And earlier in this program, we talked about how in the Alcoholics Anonymous program, those who helped others were nearly twice as likely to stay sober a year later, and their levels of depression were lower too. It's like the wounded healer principle, where helping has a great benefit for the helpers themselves. And then finally, you'll find fulfillment. You'll find fulfillment in a way that material things, material success, all other kinds of other hobbies will not give you. The fulfillment that you'll get from giving is an entirely different plane, and I think you've already alluded to that in the story that you shared.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much, Erin, for that call. And Jenny, thank you so much for being with us today and for your book. There's so much in the book that we haven't covered. There's so many uplifting stories, along with some, and we've touched on many of the things you talk about, on how each of us as individuals can do our part and what things to consider. So it's been a real pleasure for me to have a chance to visit with you. I hope we can do this again sometime. I'd really love to have you back.
Oh, I'd love to be back on your show. Thank you so much for having me, and I'd like to invite your listeners to pick up the book to discover how we can all give our time, our talents, and our treasures in a way that you not only change the world, but you transform your own life for the better.
Jenny, thank you again. Appreciate it very much.
Thank you, and I wish you a good afternoon.
As you as well. Jenny Santi is the guest today, and she is the author of the book, The Giving Way to Happiness, Stories and Science Behind the Life-Changing Power of Giving. And I certainly enjoyed reading it. I intend to keep it and take another look at it as well when I'm facing some of the same kinds of issues that we talked about here on the show today. And I really appreciate her being with us today. You know, the University of Wisconsin, we talk about giving. The University of Wisconsin-Madison is involved in a lot of giving in its own ways, too. This week happens to be International Education Week, something that I'm very happy about and proud of some of the giving that goes on in those ways. And we'll talk about International Education Week and a whole lot more connecting to the University of Wisconsin-Madison with our next guest, Chancellor Rebecca Blank. That next here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.